good question.
Good afternoon, Chair, and all the members, all the staff.
How are you?
Fine, fine. Comrade Tembo.
Just go down a little bit.
We can only see your mouth. Now we can see your eyes.
Yeah.
Better.
Go up now. Up. Yeah, just there. Don't change anything now.
Okay. Maybe just further away from the computer.
Okay. I want to.
Hi, Chairperson.
Stephen, how are you?
Good, how are you?
good.
Yes. Hi, Natimasondo.
Hey, Bamsheng.
How's it?
I'm better than yesterday. In Africa, we say, Biggie Biggie Magmier.
Yeah, exactly.
Matang, can you hear me? Comrade Tikelezi, can you hear me? Hello? Comrade Tikelezi, are you there?
She has switched.
Honorable Tikelezi and the team, the behind the scenes team, Mr. Perret, can we start?
Please. I think we're fine now. Yes.
Can you start, Mr. Perret? What's the person?
Yes, Comrade Chair, let's start.
Lumbabalo, can we start?
Yes, Chairperson, you can start.
Can we start? Yes?
Yes, Chair, you can start.
I can hear you now.
Yes, you can start, Chairperson.
So I start.
Yeah. I think the best thing is that those who are not speaking, let's switch off the mic and the video. Can the controllers help us please mute the videos and the mic? Can I be advised to Babalo if you can start?
Yes, Chairperson, you may start, even though there are a few members from our side who have not joined us, but I will address that when we are dealing with apologies.
Okay, thank you, honorable members. Let me greet all the members, the co-chairperson, Honorable Buthelezi Ushenge, members of the standing committee and select committee from both houses, the stakeholders that have joined us, you know, definitely media is here, the support staff from both the committee standing and select committee, and Team Treasurer, a very good afternoon. I know the members, you have not asked me why I'm here, why this meeting, but I found it important to remind you of our meeting on the 6th of May 2020, where I briefed you about the letter that I received from the chairperson of the NCOP, Honorable Masondo, who was advising me that the Minister of Finance has formally put a request to him on the 4th of May 2020, that the Select Committee on Appropriation should consider prioritizing the passing of the budget, the 2020 budget, that the appropriation bill and the Division of Revenue. This was due to the urgent need to introduce the adjustment budget to respond to COVID-19 pandemic and its financial needs, which were not budgeted for, and mostly to its overall challenges. Overall, honorable members, I think it is also important, as we just came from the processing the appropriations bill, sorry, the Division of Revenue Bill, D3 2020, and congratulations, well done, Select Committee. We were the last to do it yesterday. That I must also be the objective of this meeting. The main objective of this meeting, honorable joint meeting, honorable members, is to receive a briefing from National Treasury. That's the only item that we are having on the proposal of the 2020 appropriations bill, which was tabled together with other budget documents by the Minister of Finance on the 26th of February. So this is the main objective of today's meeting. But over and above that, we must not forget that we don't do this because we want to, and we must always know that we have mandate, constitutional mandate, legal mandate. And just to reflect on that with this few words, just to remind members that Section 213, Subsection 2 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa say that money may be withdrawn from the National Revenue Fund only in terms of an appropriation by an act of parliament, or B, as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund when it is provided for in the Constitution or an act of parliament. This is alongside with Section 77, Subsection 2, which require us to consider the bill in accordance with the Money Bill Procedure and Related Matters Act number 9 of 2009. Our role, honorable members, as the two committees from both houses, is to make sure that the process follows all constitutional imperatives as outlined above, with any, without any fear or favor. And I have seen that the Advocate Jenkins is here. Welcome, honorable member. Shaky Mom, welcome. With that welcoming with honorable members, I will request the two secretaries to indicate if there are any apologies. I know from the Select Committee, the honorable Karim has indicated that he will join us 15 minutes later. He is he's still held up in another meeting. The Baba Lodi, we have provincial delegates on this platform.
No, Chairperson, we did not invite them. It's only us as a committee and the standing committee. I don't have any other apology except the apology that you have just addressed of Mr. Karim Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairperson?
Yes, sir.
Standing committee on appropriations, I haven't received any apologies except for Ms. Ntlangwini, who is part of the meeting. Now she indicated that she's going to have to leave a little bit early to join another meeting. And that's it, Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
Honorable Chair.
Yes, who's that?
It's Kaiso.
Oh, Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, I just want to submit the apology of Honorable Oscar Matafa. He's writing examination.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members and the Secretariat. Thank you for those apologies. I think we are all aware, familiar with the system. We will use raise your hand icon, or you use the chat icon if your gadget does not have raise your hand or option. I'm now going to hand over to Treasury, which is led by the Deputy Minister, Honorable Masondo. You are very much welcome. I don't know if the Minister is here, but I only saw the Deputy Minister. You are very much welcome, Honorable Deputy Minister, and please lead the Team Finance, Team Treasury for the presentation. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to honorable members, members of the media, my colleagues from National Treasury. Chair, I can't keep both my camera and voice at the same time due to some technical problems I have with my machine here. So I experienced technical problems during the day on different teleconferences. So I've been advised that in the meantime, I should either use the camera or the voice. I can't use both at the same time. That's why my camera is off. My apologies for that. But fortunately, I can see all of you. It's unfortunate that you can't see me. And
but
Chair,
we are fine.
No, thanks for that, Chair. As you correctly said in your opening remarks, this is the final briefing by National Treasury on the 2020-21 appropriation bill. And this will authorize the expenditure for 2021. That is, if Parliament approves in act this bill, and it will provide the legal basis for expenditure as envisaged, as you correctly said, Chair, in the PFMA. And therefore, it is critical that this bill gets enacted so that we authorize the expenditure, so that any expenditure that government is going to incur is legally based. And I'm sure that honorable members are aware that departments have already started spending since the 1st of April using the authority provided by Section 29 of the PFMA. And this expenditure and any other variants or shifts in those allocations must first be legalized in terms of this legislation. And Chair, as you correctly said, that we'll have to come back as National Treasury to present a special budget or a supplementary budget to deal with the in-year emergency allocation caused by the COVID pandemic, including additional funds for social grants as well as health. We'll come back to present to honorable members on the adjusted budget, which will also indicate or outline the 3-year picture of where we think we should be dealing with our budget and where the economy is going. And as you are aware, honorable members, that the COVID-19 has not caused our economic problems, challenges. It has just worsened our economic challenges that we had. And therefore, the projections that we made in February and the assumption that we made in February, which did not take COVID into account, have been thrown out of the window. We are finalizing the microeconomic focus and as National Treasury, but it's, and we'll come back to our, the outcome of our forecasting so far as growth, employment, as well as the financial and fiscal indicators of our fiscal. But Honorable Chair, it's already apparent that the economy is taking a huge knock as a consequence of this shock, the COVID-19 shock. The IMF is already projecting that the global economy is going to decline by 3%. And our own economy, in terms of the IMF projections that they've released around April, if I'm not mistaken, they project that our economy is going to decline by 6%. And as far as you've already heard when the Commissioner of SARS was presenting, we're projecting a revenue shortfall of almost 300 billion. And what this will do to our deficit, it means that our deficit is going to grow, and our ability to borrow has already been negatively affected by the downgrading. So we are in a serious fiscal situation, and unemployment, it is going to increase because there is a correlation between economic growth as well as the rate of employment. And like I said, we'll come back at the end of June to state how we intend to deal with this situation, including our projections as National Treasury. And lastly, Chair, we really want to thank Parliament and its committee for moving faster than the normal years in processing the bill. And it's precisely because of the economic situation we find ourselves worsened by COVID. We really appreciate the speed at which you are moving in processing this bill, and also allowing us to come and present the adjusted budget end of June. And we are not alone in legislating for emergencies within a very short space of time, because this COVID has affected everyone, different countries, different states, through their parliaments are responding with speed in legislating intervention, financial interventions in this regard. For instance, it took the UK 14 days to pass an emergency relief. It took 15 days for the US to pass a new bill for emergency assistance. So all of us, we are working under pressure. We are doing our best to make sure that we present to the nation various interventions to help us to deal with the current shock, but also with the pre-COVID structural constraints that have disabled our economy from growing. And Chair, we really thank you for continuously holding us accountable and also helping us to speed up the processes that will enable us to spend and incur expenditure according to the law, and as lawmakers, we rely on you on the extent to which we move in processing all the legislative requirements to enable us to intervene in this current period. So, Chair, I'm going to ask Dr. Mampo Modise to lead us with a presentation on the appropriation bill, taking into account other deliberations and deliberations we've had with different stakeholders. May I hand over to Dr. Modise to lead us with a presentation on the appropriation bill. Mampo, would you kindly lead us with the presentation, please? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, GM. Dr. Modise.
Good afternoon, chairpersons and honorable members. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to do the presentation. I just thought that before I start with the presentation, I must just give you an update of the request that you made when we were last there presenting to you on the quarter spending. So we have sent through the documents that you requested through our parliamentary liaison officer, Cindy August. I just hope she sent them to the secretariat. Basically, chairpersons and honorable members, what we've sent you was the SARS report on their IT system. We also sent you the list of universities that did not receive their grants and the amounts thereof. We sent through a write-up on the road accident fund as you requested, and we also did an international experiences where we do a comparison between different countries and how their schemes are like. We also sent some estimates of the legal costs that are associated with medical legal claims as you asked for, but that work continuously to be work in progress because it gets updated. We also sent you a report on the IFMS from the Treasury. We added a presentation on the performance of our state-owned companies, including the South African Post Office, as you requested. And lastly, we sent you an update of the different conditions that were associated with the different bailouts for the SOCs. So that is the work that you requested us to send to the committees after we did the presentation for the third quarter, for the third quarter report. So, honourable members and chairpersons, I would just like to share the presentation, so you are aware where we are at and you can follow. I just want to check, is the presentation visible to honorable members? Can you all see the presentation?
Yes, it's visible.
Yeah, we can.
Yes.
All right. No, thank you so much. Thank you so much, chairpersons and honorable members. So basically, the first couple of slides were just trying to give a background on the appropriation bill and the timing thereof, but because of the emergency and how fast we need to basically approve this, I think I will just move from the normal explanation of the appropriation bill and the different timelines. So I think where I'm going to start is just to explain the structure of the bill. So basically what we're looking at is that we're looking at the detailed appropriation to the national departments and how we categorize the different allocation. Honorable members, is that we look at the current payment, which show you the compensation of employees. It shows you the goods and services. It also show you the interest on land. And we do a detailed assessment or analysis of the transfers and subsidies. We look at payment for capital assets. Basically, this will be some infrastructure projects, but mostly will be department's capital assets. And also we're looking at the payment for financial assets. And this number, honorable members, you will see later, is becoming quite big with the bailouts that we're giving to our state-owned companies. So basically, the appropriation bill is accompanied by what we refer to as the estimates of the national expenditure, which is basically the SIG publication that when we do our face-to-face meetings, I always carry it with me. And basically, that explains, or it's a memorandum explaining what is in the appropriation bill. So basically, honorable members, as the DM gave a brief position of where we are as the sovereign, what we had to do in this budget was we had to basically look at how do we reprioritize funding within the different spending programs that we have to more pressing spending pressures. So basically what have to be done was that we have to reduce our non-interest spending by about 156 billion, but this is over the next 3 years. So basically this year we will be focusing on the adjustments for 2020-21. But this gives you a good idea that for most departments, we have to implement reductions so that we can close the gaps where there was a lot of spending pressure. But we also had to propose the reductions in the spending, in the compensation of employee numbers, just to make sure that we look at all categories of expenditure. So basically, honorable members and chairpersons, this is the summary table that shows you what we have done and how we started in terms of the 2020-21 budget. So just going through it slowly just to explain. Is it updating, honorable member? Chairperson, can you see the slide?
Is she audible to you, honorable member?
Yes, yes, you can hear very well, Comrade Chair.
Honorable members, is she audible to you?
Yes, honorable, and the answer is visible, Chair.
Yes, Comrade Chair.
Must I continue, Chairperson?
Yebo, please continue.
Okay. All right, no, thank you, Chair. So basically what I was explaining is that in the 2019 budget, we had non-interest expenditure that was 1,545 billion. Now, what we do then is we set aside money for a disaster or unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure, which was 6 billion at that time. So basically it means in 2019, we had an allocation that was 1,539 billion. So when we do the expenditure, Chairperson and honorable members, the first thing that we look at would be the skills development levy, where basically the money that is coming in from the skills levy is transferred exactly the same to the Department of Higher Education. Therefore, what we do is the one billion that is less, it's mainly because the money that we expected come into the port was less by the 1 billion. So we had to reduce the spending for the skills levy, not because they were not spending or anything like that. It's mainly because the income that was coming in from the skills levy was not as high as we expected it to be. And honorable members, we also had to look at program reductions. I will go through them in the next few slides, where we basically had to look at reductions in terms of the programs that we have in terms of transfers, goods and services, and infrastructure spending and all of that, where we proposed some of the reductions, and I'll go through the consequences of that. But we also had to look at the wage bill that we have, and we basically looking at a reduction of about 37 billion in terms of the wage bill. Honorable members, the reduction in the wage bill, how one achieves the 37, is basically not to have any increase in the salaries of government employees in 2020-21. Honorable members, the biggest problem that we have been having in the recent years is that it doesn't matter how much money we try to reduce the program spending by, the pressure that is coming from the SOCs, the state-owned companies, increases each year. So despite us reducing spending by 66 billion, we had to take 44 billion of that reduction and allocate it to Eskom and the South African Airways. And the South African Airways, it's more of we had to pay off the debt that they incurred because that is guaranteed debt. And if government doesn't pay for the guaranteed debt, it means it will default and it will have implications. So basically, even if we try to move money from these programs, you get so much pressure from this. Of companies that you have to reallocate most of the money that you have identified as saving. And we also looking at there was some net change in the adjustments that we did from the 2019 budget, where we made estimates of how many people in the public service will take the early retirement. And unfortunately, honorable members and chairpersons, the people that applied for this early retirement were almost 10% of what we thought was going to be the number. So the numbers were much smaller than what we thought. So we had to reduce or take out those numbers. But we also, between the different programs, we had to reallocate some of the money for pressing spending pressure down. So basically, honorable members, coming from the 1539, basically we are now at 1531, which is a reduction of about 7 odd billion. And we're also adding the contingency reserve. But another problem, honorable members, that we're picking up is that our contingency reserve is becoming smaller because the spending pressures are becoming higher and they're becoming larger. So all in all, the total reductions in the non-interest expenditure is about 8.77 billion. But as much as this is, seems like a small reduction, when it comes to programs, you will realize that the reductions were much larger than what are the numbers that are showing here. So honorable members and chairperson, this is just a slide that gives you an indication of the reallocation to the baseline. So basically, most of these are small and they are across all different departments. So what we've done in this slide was just to show you the reallocations that are above 100 million. So, for example, we realized that the post-retirement medical assistance, there were shortfalls there. We found money, we reallocated it. As honorable members would know, that for countries that use the South African rand, your Swaziland, Lesotho and them, we basically have to compensate them for using our rand. So the money that was budgeted for was not enough because of exchange rate fluctuations, then we had to add about 340 million. For the Municipal Revenue Management Improvement Program, this is basically following the different discussions we've been having with departments as well as parliament, and the fact that in municipalities there was a lack of capacity, we prioritize funding towards capacitating these municipalities, and therefore for the year what was proposed or what is proposed is about 330 million. Then you have others such as the Universal Services and Access Fund, especially looking at the new model for broadcasting and digital migration, where we're pushing very hard for spectrum. You've added money there. With the South African Revenue Services for infrastructure-related program, we're also proposing an allocation. And also for some provincial grants, we're proposing small allocations. The 4 billion, honorable members, is just a summary of all the small different reallocations that we have done across all departments and programs. So basically, the details would be in the thick book that I said. It's an explanation or it's an explanatory memorandum to the appropriations bill. I think, honorable members, this is the slide that is more, it's the heart of what I'm presenting to you today. So basically, what this appropriation bill was doing. It was basically reprioritizing significant funding from the program. So the first one basically is that we tried as much as possible, honorable members, to basically reduce programs where we look at underperformance and understanding programs, but those were insufficient for us to make a big adjustment. So we had to make other adjustments, which basically meant there was a new, or the departments do now have to review most of these programs that are already in the system. In some cases, they need to close some of these programs, or they must scale down significantly. And the implications of some of these reductions that we're proposing to you today, chairpersons and honorable members, means that for some departments, there might be issues in terms of maintaining the state properties, especially just looking at facilities and ICT services. But what we are worried about is the possibility that there may be increases in the accruals of departments, because once departments run out of money, the first thing that they do is basically to pile up the bills and try to pay them at a later stage. So the more you reduce departments, goods and services, those will be the implications that you see from the departments. As I said, we did try, honorable members, to basically look at each program, look at whether it's just been spending or not. But at the end, what was difficult was that those programs were too small for the money that we were looking for. So if you look, honorable members, in this table, the first thing that we have done, so basically this explains the some of the baseline adjustments or reductions that we're proposing to the committee today in the appropriation field. So the first one is basically the reduction in the PRASA allocation of 4.5 billion. And honorable members, the reason why we did look at this is that as much as PRASA is desperate need of the money, the fact that they have still continued to show some underspending, and they haven't really improved in terms of fast-tracking their maintenance and also their infrastructure projects, it means there was some money that we can reduce. But the problem, as I said before, is that if you reduce PRASA money now, it doesn't mean they don't need the money. It means you're basically postponing the problem to the following year, because once they deal with their governance issues and their capacity issues, they will need...
Somebody's TV is on. Can you switch off the TV? Honorable members, can you switch off the TVs? Thank you. You can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. So I was saying that once PRASA is capacitated, then we will have to reallocate the money to them, because this doesn't mean they don't need the money. Then the second allocation or reduction, honorable members, was in terms of social grants. The government is proposing an increase of only the social grants, but what we had penciled in at the time of the budget was CPI plus 1 or 2%. So basically, if providing for CPI will result in some reduction of about 1.5 billion. There's the other smallish reductions, but the big one also would be the provincial equitable share, where basically, honorable members, what we do when we do the budgeting, we try to ensure that these reallocations or reductions are equitable across all spheres of government. So therefore, the provinces, also the local government, had to take some reductions in terms of what we're proposing to you. Therefore, the provincial equitable share, the proposal there is to reduce it by 2.3 billion, and the provincial conditional grants, a reduction of about 4.9 billion, and the massive reduction or the major grants that we're proposing, a reduction basically would be the human settlement development grants. We also looked at the equitable share, where the only savings or reductions that we could identify without crippling all of these municipalities was about 1 billion, but things have evolved so fast that at the current point in time, we have realized that municipalities are not generating revenue or sufficient revenue because of COVID. Therefore, that's why the president has said that we need to look for other money somewhere to try and assist with local government, so that 1 billion means it will be reversed and we will be allocating more funds to that. But we also had to look at some of the provincial grants, honorable members, and the ones that we basically looking at was the public transport network grant. So basically the reduction meant that the integrated public transport network has to be suspended, especially the planning and the implementation thereof. So it means that for the Buffalo City, from Bombela and for Sunduzi, we need to suspend the implementation of the integrated transport, public transport network. What it also means is that for some of the infrastructure grants in basic and higher education means that the departments will now have to revise their plans and also delay some of the projects that they have. But we also found some reductions in the Department of Health, where basically what that means is that the implementation of some of the components of the NHI, which is the National Health Insurance, will now be phased in over a longer period than what we anticipated. So, Chairperson and honorable members, these were the proposed budget reductions or adjustments at the time of the budget 2020 when the minister was presenting.
Thank you.
I was still presenting my computer just from.
Okay.
Sorry, I'll wrap up just now.
Okay.
And so basically, Chairperson, this is just a slide that shows you that we have provisionally allocated about 6.5 billion for the South African Airways, and that is for the debt that they have and which is guaranteed. But we also had provisional allocations for the disaster recovery effort, and most of this money has already been allocated for COVID 2020 plans. So basically, Chairperson, this is summary for the committee so that you can see the differences between what was presented at the time of the 2019 budget versus the 2020 budget and the different deviations. And what is very clear here is that all other spending categories have declined. The only one that has increased will be the payment for financial assets, and that is mainly because of ESCOM and SAA. This, Chairperson and honorable members, give you the compensation of employees, and we chose the largest departments that make up the bulk of the different categories. And then here, as you can imagine, the departments at the national department at the national level that are compensation driven would be the services departments, such as your police, defense and correctional services, as well as higher education and training. Shows you, honorable members, that goods and services 0.1 billion at the time of the budget, but now we're reducing that significantly to 77, and this accounts for about 79% of the goods and services. These are taxes and subsidies that were reduced, and I've already explained the reason for the lower social development, the reason for the lower transport, as well as some of the human settlements. And these honorable members just shows you the different transfers to public entities. And what I wanted to highlight was, because of the elections and the pressures, the Independent Electoral Commission received additional money in terms of dealing with that. But there's other institutions that were preserved from the reductions, including the public protector, including the South African the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. So some of these entities have received additional funding, but as I explained before, PRASA's budget was reduced because of some of the understanding.
And this will be the capital assets, where mainly there were reductions in terms of spending for capital assets. And as I said, this means a postponement or starting most of the programs later. And then finally, honorable members, that sums up the payment for financial assets, where basically for public enterprises it's Eskom and SAA, but for the National Treasury, this is the membership that we have to pay for the NGP, which is sometimes referred to as the BRICS Bank. So, honorable members and chairperson, this is just a quick summary of what is contained in the appropriation bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Modise. My apologies, honorable members. I had connectivity problem. I was struggling. I couldn't hear much of the presentation, but with your assistance, we'll be able to engage here. Do we have hands, Secretariat? Can you help us? Can you help me, please, indicate who wants to speak, Secretariat?
Solam Lenzana.
And?
Are you so?
Honorable Ryder. I don't expect members to shout. I told you what to do at the beginning. Kaiso? Who else? Lubabalo Estelle? Darren?
Mr. Imam is raising his hand. Mr. Okamp is also indicating that he would like to ask a question, Chair.
Okay, I've got Mlenzana, Raida, Kaiso, Imam, and Honorable Okamp.
Will you please add Dennis Joseph? Thank you.
Add who? Joseph?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And who else?
Mr. Dudoit, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Dudoit. Okay, thank you. And then some will indicate. Okay, honorable members, we will follow the indication as written here, as given to me, as about in as far as people who want to speak. I will start by giving Honorable Mlenzan, and honorable members, if possible, please, can we limit ourselves to 3 minutes, if possible? I'm pleading, but if not, the maximum will be 4 minutes. Thank you. Honorable Mlenzan.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. Good afternoon, Principal and Team Treasurer. Chairperson, just one thing. Dr. Mampo would know, I've been arguing this question of the targeting of departments and entities which do not perform, and also understand that their budgets would be cut. But now I have changed my heart, Chairperson. Now, let me welcome that. But then, would you do
that? You have to love it.
but then, Chairperson, my interest now would be, particularly when you are talking these cuts at the provincial and the local government level. Particularly at local government level, Chairperson, if Treasury could find a way of introducing the realization of this district management model, wherein there would be some kind of assistance, so that it is not just a question of cutting, reducing, and all that. But then secondly, also linked to that, assistance. If also there could be strong enforcement of consequence management in cases where underperformance and understanding is due to persistent misconduct and neglect by officials. It's just that, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you. very much, Honorable Lenzani. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, I tend to strongly agree about the consequence management and the lack of that to date. And I feel that that is a key issue. I think it came across strongly in the declaration in the NCOP yesterday, but non-performance in local government financially and a lack of governance needs to have harsh consequences. So, Honourable Mlenzana, I strongly support what you were saying there. Chair, on to my own point, though, and this is obviously addressed directly at Treasury, it's quite clear, two things have become quite clear. Number one is that COSATU is not on board in terms of assisting or cooperating in any way in terms of reducing the public sector wage bill. They've already indicated that they're insistent that existing three-year agreements are adhered to, and they also have indicated that they will be pushing for further increases going forward. So the result of that is that the Treasury's projections for the next 3 years in terms of where they can reduce the expenditure is clearly flawed, because it's expecting cooperation from people that have said that they will not cooperate. My question really in terms of that is there a plan B? Certainly I know that we as a Democratic Alliance have proposed a plan B, but is Treasury working on other options, because there must be a reduction in expenditure no matter what. The other thing that I wanted to say is that the projections that this appropriations bill was based on initially have all changed. Revenue collection has gone out of the window, and not only for national government and for the receiver of revenue, but also certainly at a local government level, is going to be a whole new rewrite required and a whole new approach. So I would just like to hear a few more thoughts in terms of what Treasury's approach is going to be, in terms of the fact that our revenue collection is likely to be way below what was anticipated initially. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Kaiso.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and want to welcome the presentation that has been made. My questions are, I'm looking at the presentation. Now, I just want to check, given the situation that the pandemic is giving, is it still necessary to, exercise that deep cut in the human settlement? Yes, of course, there are these departments which are not spending properly. But given human settlement itself, is it still necessary really to go deeper than that 2.3 billion rand, given the challenge that the pandemic, COVID-19 is giving? Currently, overall, I'm actually referring to the whole package of provincial conditional grants, that perhaps the bill has to consider, instead of really looking at the cut, but you should deal with the issue of consequence management and agreeing with what Honorable Zola Mlenzani has said, because obviously it's weighing very weighty to the budget as it appears currently. And secondly, I want to move swiftly to this question. Well, it's a very sensitive question. I've heard the Honorable Ryder from the DA is raising it, that the issue of the wage bill. We don't want to be taken by surprise that, in fact, the matter has not been properly handled with the relevant stakeholders. I want to assume, perhaps we'll hear from the feedback, that it's also a well-consulted process through the organized labor, because it shouldn't take us by surprise tomorrow to learn that now that exercise has not been thoroughly gone through and therefore pose a problem in future. So I'm interested to get to understand from the Treasury. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Faisal. Honorable Imam.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to Treasury for the presentation. My first question is this the only way forward where we talk about reduction in many key areas, particularly taking into consideration that given COVID-19, we are going to have mass unemployment, many businesses are going to be closing down. We've already agreed that the revenue collection is going to be what, under at least 300 billion rand less this year. Now, is there no other measures that Treasury also believes they should put in place that can counter this? Or maybe Treasury should tell us, what are your limitations? What are your restrictions? Are you hamstrung for any other reason that, because you are the custodians of these resources? Is there anything additional? And I'm going to give you a good example, which I sound like a stuck record every time I talk about this for the last 4 years. And that is the amount of money we lose in South Africa because you don't get value for money. I mean, at least 240 billion or 40% on goods and services is what you're losing because you don't get value for money. Now, I know there is a process in place. If Treasury can tell us how soon we can expect that to be implemented, the most transparent process in the tender system anywhere in the world, when can we expect that so that everybody would be aware exactly what you're paying for, which item, who got the contract, how much is it getting paid, what was the price of each individual item. So an item costs 1 rand, you will pay 1 rand, not pay 100 rand for it. So if you can tell me that, I think that will make my day. Now, the other thing is this. Treasury, I've asked this question before, but for some reason, it's perhaps not under your domain completely. South African Airways. We've inquired as to the entire aircraft fleet that was sold, and we asked for a report on these things. Could you kindly facilitate a report together with public enterprises to tell us what happened to our assets? Why did we sell it? Who authorized it? How much did we sell it? Who benefited? Why are we renting from the same person? Is that not the reason why we are where we are today in terms of that? Now, my concern is, you know, we initiated something very good in the country. And that was in the human settlements development section. And that was to be able to create an avenue for people to be able to build their own houses or homes with a very low interest rate. Now with an over 2 billion rand cut here, it means that it's only going to be a dream or a night, you know, for our people, which they're not going to achieve it. Will you agree with me if I say, given what we are doing right now, ordinary South Africans cannot expect in the near future any improvement in the quality of services to what they are experiencing right now, given the in COVID-19, with the reduction and the lack of consequences in the country? Could you please comment on that one for me? Chair, am I running out of time?
Yes, you are. Thank you for being sensitive. Conclude. Conclude, sir.
Okay. But then finally, I want you to tell me, we need a balance in the country in terms of creating jobs and boosting this economy. You don't talk about anything towards boosting this economy and creating the jobs. Given the fact we have a union that is a loggerhead with government at the moment, we need to reduce the cost of doing business. We need to manage it. It's a joke, you know, with 59 people, I've said this, 2 million people. We are buying PPEs, we're running short, we can't manufacture. Is there some measures we can put with a balance, bringing union, bringing government, bringing us all together so that we could try and do something for the future, put our differences aside for less, rather earn 1,000 rand a week than not earning anything at all, but boost the economy. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you, Honorable Imam. Honorable Okan, you're next.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if I listen to the presentation and to what the Deputy Minister said, we have heard all this stuff over and over again in the past. We have, from the DA side, we have warned about the effects of decisions that have been made in the past. I think I get the idea that we are so getting used to these troubles. We are like people walking into a haunted house, but we are not afraid of the ghosts anymore because there are so many ghosts and we got so used to all those ghosts. I think it's time that we point out what those ghosts are. Those ghosts are the fact that we said in the past, stop helping failing state-owned enterprises, because giving them money will take money away from the people on ground level, the people in South Africa that need those money, that money the most. And we were laughed off. Money were thrown into a bottomless pit, and that is why we are sitting where we are sitting. Einstein said that insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. Why are we doing the same things over and over? We are making the same mistakes over and over, but we expect to receive different results, but we keep on making those mistakes. And if I say we, I'm talking about government. If one looks at the state-owned enterprises, we have heard today quite a few times that certain debts had to be paid because that were guaranteed debts. Now, what government is trying to do is they are trying to take hold of the pensions of people to stand as security for those loans. How can we justify that? Because of the incompetency of government over years, now people on ground levels must give their pensions as security for loans to state-owned enterprises, which are still being run badly. We cannot do that. I would like to know what Treasury stands on that is. I would also just bring on with what the Honourable Ryder said, that we are trying to reduce money, but that has not happened with the consent of the unions. I don't see how we are going to do a saving of 37 billion in a wage bill if COSATU and other unions has not agreed to that. I think we are beating around the bush. So if we can get sanity into what we are doing by not making the same mistakes all the time, I would agree that, and I think the people of this country deserve that. Thank you very much. Are you so stunned that you can't react now? What's going on?
Billy, I think you can chair the meeting going forward.
Who's next, honourable members? I think honourable Mashang might be having a problem of connection. Who's next on the line?
Can I continue, Chair? Sorry.
Hello, honourable Tutu, please come in.
Thank you, Jane. Chair, yes, I've been partially covered by the previous honourable members.
Honourable Ockham, Honourable Detoit, I thought the next person is Joseph, but now that you're on the stage, please go on, and then Honourable Joseph will come after you.
Thank you, Chair.
You can go on. Okay.
Thank you. Chair, my main concern is all of us know that we're going to have a lot less money going into the financial coffers of the country. I mean, the DM alluded himself that we're looking at about a 300 billion revenue shortfall that we might experience this year. What is a concern is the fact that, if I can point to one specific thing in education, about 1,500 schools have been looted, vandalized. Some of them have been burned down over this COVID period. And in spite of that, there's a budget cut on the side of education infrastructure, as well as on basic education and higher education. I know that obviously the children haven't gone to school yet, but there must be a bigger effort, and obviously more money will be spent to assist those children to get up to standard with regards to their studies. So that's just a concern on my side, and I want to add to the fact that we're sitting with a huge problem with the bailouts of state-owned enterprises like SAA, and if Treasury could perhaps provide specifics with regards to exact figures used to bail out SAA and the other state-owned enterprises, and if there is something in the near future where they might be giving assistance to Eskom, if we could be informed of that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Joseph.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the National Treasury for the presentation. The Minister said that the department has already started with the budget, so I think we need to get over this budget as soon as possible, that we can seriously look at the supplementary or the adjustment budget. I just want clarity on one point. I've heard the 44 billion to Eskom and SAA, and that's guaranteed money. But I just wanted to know if and I know Treasury is transparent. If there's any money, new money for SAA or Eskom, particularly that is linked to the airline, what is the information, or is it still coming, or do they have information that they want to share? We want transparency. And then my question on the reductions, I wasn't clear on slide 12. There was a statement made about SAA again, and it's quickly with the slide being off too quick there. Because my question would be on that slide is that on the main budget, where we do now the, we heard from Treasury the adjustments, will there be another review that will include all departments if they come with the adjustment budget, including the departments or state-owned entities that they refer to now? I think that is important for me. And then on the comment on how we need to move forward on austerity measures or reducing our expenditure, I think we should, we're in a crisis financially, as the minister said, going forward with the economy and COVID-19, we seriously have to review how we spend money. But I think we will go in circles forever and ever, Chairperson, if we don't form a task team or create an urgency like COVID-19 has forced us to think differently and do differently. So maybe we should call in the FFC, Financial Fiscal Commission. They have made a lot of proposals to us going forward, and have this task team with all the role players. But if we leave it for every department just to come when they're ready, when they have time, and the members also said the unions must be involved and other role players, we have to seriously look at the task team that tackle what we need to tackle in open and in an honest way. And because if South Africa need to get out of this economic crisis, we need to do things differently and work differently with our money. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Joseph. I'll give to Honorable Karim and thereafter Honorable Buthelezi. Honorable Karim? Karim Yunis?
Chairperson, I don't often speak. I don't particularly have anything to say, except that there's nothing new coming from the opposition, and I don't want to repeat exactly what I've said a million times as well. Thank you.
That's what we're here for. We're not here to say...
Thank you, Honorable Joseph. Honorable Joseph, don't do that. Don't do that.
As a member,
not to fall into the trap, eh? Honorable Buthelezi, what's your person?
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, honorable members. Thank you, Dr. Mampo, with the presentation. I just want to make this one thing that there seems to be a problem about the capacity to spend money and spend money effectively and efficiently. That you will see in a number of ways: underspending, overspending, overshooting of time frames in terms of budgets, and so on and so forth. So I just wanted to check with National Treasury, because obviously throwing money into problems is not a panacea to those problems. Are we having any programs as government to try and deal with that problem, which is a perennial problem? I think we've identified the time and again. That's why now we're going so and so, it's not spending, we're decreasing and so on. And we should do that because, as we always say, that the money that you allocate to the departments is not always the money that you have. The opportunity cost of that money, that's number one. But two, is the money that you go out to the market and borrow at a cost. But you find that that money is not being utilized. As you would know, for instance, some SOCs are having money in their banks, which they're supposed to have used, and they're not using that money. A very expensive way of doing business. But it boils down to the capacity of the state to spend and spend effectively. So my question is, have we started any programs as government to try and deal with that perennial problem? secondly, DM and Dr. Mampo, these reductions obviously have got an impact on the macroeconomic performance in general. Can you share that with us, for instance? What impact are these going to have? Yes, as far as the budget is concerned, we are trying to balance your books, but the impact on the macroeconomic performance in general, and economic growth and employment creation in particular, what impact is that going to have? What are your models saying? Honorable Lenzana, I don't know why you forgot, because last week you had an issue about the rating agencies. If you remember, I said just hold on to that question. Dr. Rating agencies will be with us this week, as former Minister of Finance used to call Mampo. And just to remind you that there was a question that I asked you to hold on.
Yes, please, it's for me, Jefferson, please.
You remember, I forgotten, but I think we'll ask Honorable Masang to give an opportunity. You are muted, Comrade Chair. There's something you wanted to say.
Okay, I was reminding him that I'm the one sharing.
So I was saying, no, we'll plead with the honorable chair to give him an opportunity, because he was banning last week wanting to ask this the question that that he had. And lastly, Chairperson, just want to get from Dr. Mampo, where do we provide for things like the fines that the government will charge? For instance, let me talk about the Competition Commission. You'll find that there are some fines that are being charged and so on for those companies. As you know, that it's a practice in this country that there are some big companies who is in their DNA to always collude and fleece the state in the process. And we always hear that they've been charged so much and so on. Where is that money accounted for? Which budgetary line do you see that? If you could just share that with us. But thank you very much. I'll end there. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Shenge. Honorable Mlenzane, you haven't used your full minutes, but that's why I want to give you the opportunity again. You can go back to your pending issue, your pending question.
Thanks, Chairperson, for the opportunity. It's good that my Chairperson knows me. I had now other issues more than that one. Chairperson, my question in the main was on, you know, the manner in which currently these rating agencies are dealing with us, particularly as a country. And I was like, is it not, Dr. Mampo, is it not something which is, you know, planned? Look, it starts by downgrading the whole country. And now the question to me last week was that now it's now focusing on these agencies, the downgrading, and what informs this? That was my question. I know which person one may be tempted to say, if it's not political, if it's not looking at actually looking down at the whole country, but then Chairperson said no, Dr. Mampo will be able to deal with this thing. Thanks, Chair.
Lenzani, thank you. Now I'll hand over to the DM and Team Treasury to respond to the questions. Dr. Mudise Mampo and DM.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, honorable members. I think the first thing that I am going to respond to honorable members would be the information that you have asked in terms of the SOC bailout. I hope that the honorable members can see. So this is basically in the budget review to 2020, where we presented the summary of the different recapitalization, honorable members. And as you can see, basically how to read this table is that between 2008-09 and 1920, government has basically bailed out Eskom by 123.7 billion, and the 56 billion that is here was the 56 that was in the special appropriation bill, which was approved by this committee. And then in 2021-22, there's another 33 billion that is proposed to be allocated to Eskom, and another 23 billion in 2022-23. So this is Eskom so far since 2008 and 9. There is an appropriation, or the appropriation was 137, but we're proposing that for the next coming 3 years, the money allocated to Eskom is 112 billion. When we move to SAA, honorable members, the current that they have already received is the 22 billion, but there's a proposal in this bill that we're presenting today that SAA gets an additional 10 billion, and this 10 billion will be funding the redemptions and guaranteed debt, and this debt is paid over a period. That's why you see the different allocations in 2021-22 and 2023. Then there's a proposal to give DINEL funds of about 600 million. The South African Express, a proposal of giving them funds of about 200, is basically 165, and that is purely because of the guaranteed debt. And I think what has been and which is a problem is that these allocations or these recapitalizations have increased considerably in the last few years. So basically we're looking at the total recapitalization to state-owned companies in 2019-20 of 9.8 billion, and the proposal in this bill is 2021 is 7 billion. And I just want to emphasize, honorable members and chairpersons, is that this is a proposal that was approved by cabinet and presented to the committee. The committee does have the leeway to change some of these proposals that we have, but this is what we think is the best in terms of the situation that we are under. So basically, if we don't allocate these funds to SAA, it means government has to pay for it because it's guaranteed debt. So if you propose that we don't pay off the guaranteed debt, then it means the sovereign will default. I think what we are finding ourselves is that we're in a situation where whatever you do doesn't seem to be sufficient, or there's always trying to find the most or the worst of the evil. If we don't help Eskom, then we won't have electricity. So how do you balance giving the entity money or bailing it out vis-a-vis dealing with the consequences of not bailing it out? So this is just a table, honorable members, that we published in the budget review in chapter 8. We just give you from 28 and 9 fiscal year how much we have allocated to the SOC. And then the another question on the IFMS and also on procurement. I think honorable members will know or are aware that the procurement bill is in front of cabinet, and we're waiting for cabinet to have to look at it and then give us approval so that we can bring it to parliament, and also to have it to have public hearings on the bill. But we have asked a lot of departments to give us their indication of what or how can we do procurement better, and we have received over 1,000 of these comments from different departments and provinces, and even some of the public entities. Therefore, we incorporated most of them, summarized them, and then sent the bill to cabinet for consideration. So I just hope that the sooner we deal with this, the better. But, honorable members, if you can, if basically when we were hit by COVID, Treasury has issued several instructions on basically ensuring that the procurement of some of these PPEs and all of that is made easier. So not that we relaxed the procurement rules, but we basically tried to ensure that we fast-track the procurement, but ensuring that we stick to the rules and the law. So these inspections basically were helping the different companies, and they had to basically take into consideration the fact that we promote localization, we promote small businesses, but we still want most of these things to be done at a pace that is faster, and we didn't want the procurement to be what is blocking us to basically save lives. So the Chief Procurement Officer has issued several regulations that we can easily send the secretariat so that the two committees can have the sight of how we amended or we try to help the departments to procure, but by maintaining all the laws related to the procurement. So that's what we have done. Honorable members, the thing with an adjustments budget or the adjustment, the appropriation bill is that at that time when we were looking at it, we basically tried to come up with best decisions given the situation, and now there's been a lot of movements in the funding. So for example, the announcement by the president that municipalities must get about 20 billion to deal with some of the water and human settlement issues, some of the money was reprioritized towards all of that. So basically the adjustments budget will give a very good indication of how the funds were reprioritized to try and deal with COVID. The reason why we're looking at presenting an adjustment budget only focusing for this year is because this is the crisis year, and the way in which we move funds has to be different because we, as I said, we're dealing with the crisis. But basically, most of what we are doing, we still have to finalize it. We still have to take it to cabinet for approval before we come to parliament. So basically, it's difficult for me to say this is exactly what we're going to do in the adjustments budget because we're still working on it. As you can imagine, honorable members, the time pressure that we have, it's very difficult to basically push everything, but we're working on it, and most of these details we will be presenting them in parliament on the 24th of June. So before cabinet approves something, there can be a lot of changes, so I can't really say this is where Treasury is seeing the adjustments appropriation bill. We have had several engagements with the unions in terms of the wage bill, but I'll leave the DM to help with that. But basically, for the first time, we actually try to make sure that we present to the unions in advance and put the situation as is. Honorable members, the truth of the matter is that we are in trouble. The truth of the matter is that the fall in GDP, the fall in tax revenue, the fact that we are now struggling to borrow because we were downgraded, and we are now basically sub-investment, which is done. It means that we cannot borrow at favorable interest rates, so the borrowing costs are extremely high. And what the ALM, which is our Asset and Liability Management team, is struggling with is that they have used most of the reserves to try and, you know, deal with the cash buffers, but at some point, we still have to look at the balance of high borrowings vis-a-vis what we can afford. So basically, we're in a situation where our spending is relatively high, but you don't have income, so you cannot afford what you plan to spend. As a result, we have to relook at how we do the spending. That's why there's been such decreases that have been proposed over the years, is because each year revenue continuously underperforms, and then if it underperforms, you can't really spend way more than what you can afford. That's why we do these reductions. But what one has to look at and think about is how do we rationalize our state-owned companies, because those are some of the categories that use most of these reprivatization, and also how do we deal with the waste. I think the issue that I wanted to highlight is that with the waste bill, we have understood and did the analysis. So in the budget, there's a full annexure that is giving numbers, it gives tables, it gives the trend, it shows you how the government employees' salaries compare to the private sector, and we show that the reason or the reason why the wage bill is high is not necessarily the numbers of employees in the state, it's more of the rate at which we pay the same people in government. So that annexure gives a very good detail of the assessment that we have done in terms of the wage bill. DM, would you like to help me with the political ones?
Everything is political. Politics about distribution of resources, who gets what, when. So the questions that you are asking, you are answering, they are also political, but you are giving the technical explanation of the politics. So there's nothing apolitical in what you said, as I always say. Honorable Chair, may I go ahead? Hello? Thank you. The first question on the consequence management, and I think the question that came from Honorable Mlenzani, I saw an Honorable Rider. The amended Public Audit Act empowers the AG to follow up with accounting officers on actions taken to recover public funds that get lost in different expenditure, wasteful So I think the auditor, the AG, if you fail to take actions as the accounting officer, the accounting officers, according to this amended Public Audit Act, will be personally held liable for such misconduct. So already we've got a very good legal basis to tackle misconduct insofar as the management of the public funds. And I think it will be important to assess and look at how far we are in implementing some of the aspects of the Public Audit Act. And I think at the moment, in the context of COVID, AG is also doing in-year auditing. In other words, AG is not waiting for the end of the financial year and start auditing. There are certain transactions that AG will be auditing during the year in order to deal with the potential misconduct, corruption in the context of the procurement of services as well as goods in the context of this emergency procurement necessitated by the COVID. So there are a couple of things that AG is also doing in this context, period in which we find ourselves in. Because in this context, we do need to do everything possible to make sure that this environment isn't abused by different state organs. So they are, firstly, as I said, measures that you have passed as Parliament to make sure that there is consequence management and it is properly legislated. On the issue on the wage bill, which was also raised by Honorable Ryder, I think Mampo Dr. Modise has tried to answer it, that there are ongoing conversations, negotiations with the labor movement, and those negotiations from government side are led by Minister Senzo Mkhunu. On the issue around SAA, I think in one of the inter-committee meeting where we presented SAA situation, ESCOM, it was led by the DPE, Department of Public Enterprise. There was a presentation led by the Department of Enterprise. We made commitments that we will come back with written answers insofar as what are the plans in dealing with the SAA as well as the ESCOM. But I'll come back to the ESCOM issue later. But insofar as the SAA, Honorable Sheikh, I think we'll have to come back with following on the commitment that we made previously when we ourselves and the Department of Public Enterprise, the commitment that we made that will come back to you also in writing. And I think the issue around the value for money, Dr. Mampo has covered me there. The other point was on the recovery plan, economic growth. I think Cabinet is seized with that responsibility in working out the measures that we need to put in place to make sure that, amongst other things, the cost of doing business in South Africa is low as our basis to attract more investment, domestic capital formation in order to create jobs. So I think we'll have to come back insofar as that is concerned. Like I said, Cabinet is working hard to put together a recovery plan. And I think some of the things that we are thinking about is essentially how we accelerate the structural reforms and in making sure that we reduce the cost of doing business in South Africa. We are working very hard to make sure that the electricity, ESCOM is sorted out, Transnet is sorted out, because it's indeed unacceptable that road transportation of goods, it's cheaper than rail. Rail should be cheaper as opposed to road being cheaper, and therefore we've got to be doing something insofar as reducing the cost of doing business is concerned, and the Transnet has a huge responsibility to assist us in that regard. Now, the question from Honorable Okam on the pension fund, and I think here is referring to the proposal made by COSATU on the swapping the loan that they've advanced to the PIC, swapping it into equity. I must indicate that as the ministry, that is finance ministry, we have not had any representation made to us on this question, but we must reiterate that the decision of allocating the assets, in this instance, the savings, the deferred wages of the workers held in the form of pension, that the decision, allocation decision of those assets lie with the PIC board based on the mandate of their clients, GEPF, UIF, who basically give mandate to the PIC board on how they should allocate those assets. That those decisions lie with the PIC a board, as a ministry, and as a department, we don't get involved in the decision-making processes on how those assets get allocated. On Eskom, our position as National Treasury, that is Eskom debt, we've always maintained that the Eskom debt is a symptom of the cost structure and the business model that is seen to be generating a lot of inefficiencies, a lot of costs for Eskom. Because if you run a business and your costs are higher than your revenue, and consequently you continuously seek bailouts, capital injection, recapitalization, equity injection, there's something wrong with the cost structure of your business. And it's for this reason that we say that Eskom needs to improve its operational efficiencies, needs to look at its cost drivers, which are generating this debt that we've had for years. And there's a couple of things that Eskom is basically doing. Firstly, in looking at the cost drivers, and amongst other cost drivers, is the primary sources of energy, coal as an example, IPPs as an example, another example. Eskom is having conversations with the coal suppliers. They've identified coal suppliers to start conversation on the reduction of the coal price that they are providing or supplying to Eskom, which is one of the key cost drivers, the IPPs. There are conversations going on insofar as the cost drivers that are causing a lot of cost for Eskom. And there are other issues that are related to the restructuring of Eskom, including the Eskom finance company. And like I said, in the meeting that we had with yourselves, we said we'll come back with written answers on what we are basically doing insofar as Eskom is concerned. And I fully agree with Honorable Dennis Joseph on the need for common action for recovery, social compacting, the spirit and attitude that we've basically undertaken, or the attitude and the spirit that has basically guided us in dealing with COVID. It needs to be taken further for us to recover from the COVID worsened economic crisis that we are basically facing, and some of the people are saying is going to be, if we don't do something decisive, it is going to be greater than the Great Depression of the 1930s. So we fully agree that we need to join hands, labor, government, business, and all South Africans, in making sure that we act together in the same way as we've acted to deal with the COVID-19. Honorable Buthelezi Shenge, Chair, I think Dr. Modise has dealt with the issue around the strategy in dealing with under expenditure, and I kind of agree with you more there, insofar as the opportunity cost related to under expenditure, and I think she has basically dealt with that question. And on your point about the impact of budget adjustments downwards on the microeconomic performance, I think, let me state what Economics Theory 101 says, and our current reality. We all know that GDP, The economic growth is a function of consumption by households, consumption by business, which is investment, consumption by government, which is expenditure, as minus imports. The reality we face, so that's what the theory says, that for you to grow, all this accounting indices, they need to do very well. Consumption, investment, government, export minus imports. In other words, you need to export more than importing more. So if you look at the question of household consumption, given the level of unemployment that we basically have, now we're coming to our reality from theory to reality. We're facing a lot of challenges there, and with the impact of COVID, a lot of households are going to lose their incomes, and their ability to spend is going to be impacted very badly. We've tried through the stimulus package to stabilize the incomes, but we need to do more insofar as that is concerned in terms of generating employment. And for us to generate employment, we definitely have to make sure that there is investment, and therefore business has to consume more by way of buying labor, buying workers in order for them to work. They need to invest, consume by way of buying machinery and other inputs that they basically require. And for them to do that, we've got to lay a conducive environment as government to make sure that they've got investor, they've got confidence that indeed the capital that will be putting, the money that will be putting our economy is going to enable them to generate return. And I think that's where it's important for us to look at the structural reforms, deal with electricity, deal with the telecommunication for them to basically have the necessary infrastructure to do business. Any investor who comes into South Africa should be confident that indeed when they set up a plant, there will be electricity. If they've got to export or import, what they're importing and exporting should be delivered and be delivered on time at a competitive price, and therefore it's important for us to look at Transnet, roads and other infrastructure that are important for us to have investors seeing South Africa as one of the countries where they can make reasonable returns if they were to put their capital here. And here I'm talking about not only foreign business, but also the South African businesses. Because some of the companies that are filing for business rescue, they are citing issues around electricity costs, rail costs, which are making it difficult for them to basically invest and grow and have reasonable returns. So for us to basically grow the economy, and that's why Honorable Shenge and honorable members, we keep on emphasizing that structural reforms are very, very, very important. Now, if you look at the government expenditure, we've just presented that to you now, that we're very constrained insofar as that is concerned. The ability of government to spend in order to stimulate the economy is constrained by a whole range of factors, i.e., our ability to generate revenue. We've just indicated earlier on that we're going to have a revenue shortfall of almost 300 billion. So our ability to basically spend and stimulate the economy is constrained insofar as government's ability to spend is concerned. Borrowing. And borrowing is always, increasing your debt is always productive if you're borrowing in order to spend on infrastructure. But borrowing for consumption, for wages, does not generate economic growth. So if we are to borrow, we've got to borrow in order to direct whatever money that we'll have raised towards economic growth and, in this instance, spending on infrastructure. But that policy instrument, our ability to borrow, as we've just indicated now, is highly constrained in many respects. Now, our ability to export is also depend on our competitiveness as a country, because you can't sell something globally if your costs of production are very high. So we've got to start here at home in making sure that we are competitive, so that whatever we export in the international market is quite competitive compared to other competitors. And I think the global environment is also very challenged in the context of the trade wars that we're basically seeing. We worried that some of the countries, as part of their recovery plans, they may adopt very protective measures informed by their economic nationalism, particularly in the global south. We have seen the Brexit. There's been a talk in France about Frexit from EU. And even before this crisis, we've seen what has been called a trade wars between China as well as the US. And if those big markets get closed, our ability to earn foreign exchange through exporting and earn more money and encouraging our businesses to invest and reinvest, and thus seeing a better conditions for economic growth, we will be challenged insofar as that is concerned. So we're watching very closely what is also actually going on at the global level. We are working very hard to make sure that the African continental free trade is realized, and that will also depend on Africa dealing with the other structural constraints which are making it difficult for us to have a common market, and that relates to road infrastructure and other infrastructure that should enable us to transport goods and services across the continent. So we always encourage Africa that instead of adopting economic nationalism, which is very, very protective through raising tariffs, it's important for Africa to adopt the free trade so that we trade amongst ourselves. So if you to bring down that 101 economic theory into our reality and look at all those variables that are important for economic growth, we're very challenged, and therefore we need to be thinking very hard about what we basically need to do. The other question which was also asked by Honorable Blendani on the credit, on the rating agencies. We all know that the rating agencies are there to assess the ability of countries, companies to pay back the money that they borrow, because lenders, when they borrow money, they need to be assured that the money will be paid back and be paid back on time. So it's like when you go to a bank, they do credit assessment, and if they feel that you won't be able to pay back the money, they won't advance that credit to you because you are a credit risk. So they do a credit risk assessment. Now, how do they know that a country, a sovereign, will be able to pay the money that we go all out and borrow? So they look at economic growth, and for obvious reasons, that if the economy is growing, it means that you'll be generating enough revenue, generating enough employment, which enables you to basically meet your debt obligations. You are less likely to default. But if your economy is not growing, they get worried about your ability to pay the debt, and as a result, they will be reluctant to borrow you the money. If they do, they will, that is, I'm talking about the people who will be borrowing money, because the credit rating agencies, they don't borrow money, but they assist those ones who want to advance credit to assess whether a sovereign or a company is credit worthy or not. And they do that also for our SOEs. That is why the land bank was also junked. So they also look at your ability, your debt, your current debt, on how you are restructuring it, how you basically reorganizing your debt to make sure that you don't increase it in a manner that will make it very difficult for you to borrow, I mean to pay back your debt or to meet your debt obligation. They also look at institutions, whether the legal framework under which you operate will enable you to basically A, to grow the economy, but also to pay back the debt. So I think we need to, the solution does not lie in in what we need to do in order to grow our economy, because it's on those bases that we will be able to say we are credit worthy. Please borrow us money for
DM, somebody is talking. Please, can you please mute your microphones? There's somebody who's interfering with the deputy minister. Like, please mute. Just let us just make sure that we are all muted. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Once more. So I think for us, I think the task is basically, because the rating agencies, they give us a mirror to look at ourselves, and let's use that mirror to look at ourselves and say, what are the things that we need to do and deal with some of the issues that they basically raised, ranging from economic growth and so forth and so forth. So I think that's our answer insofar as the rating agencies are concerned. So in conclusion, Chair, I think we will really want to persuade honorable members to pass this bill so that we deal with the expenditures that are required of us by from the population. And I think, like we said, that towards the end of June, we'll come back to you on how we are seeing the economy, and how we think that we should respond from the fiscal policy, and how working together with different departments in government, how we are thinking about the recovery plan post-COVID, and I'm saying post-COVID not because the virus will be gone, but I mean when the conditions to manage the virus will be better than they are today or yesterday. So, Chair, once more, we want to thank you, but still want to persuade you that I think it will be important for us to move with speed in processing the bills and all the legislative requirements without rushing it for the sake of it, but also paying a critical eye on whether the things that we are doing as an executive are indeed in the interest of the country, in the interest of the South Africans. And we think that this bill does attempt to move us forward with its shortcomings, but this is the best that we can produce under the circumstances, and we'll come back towards the end of June with more ideas, on how we readjusted the budget and how we think we should grow our economy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mashang, are you there? Okay, if I may continue. She has been having some problems. So was Honorable Peters trying to also to come in. She has just sent some questions to me, and I'll quickly read them, Zeba team, and I'll request a team treasury just to quickly attend to those questions that she has raised. Question number one, it's, will the reduction in Prasat be reallocated to Prasat to address the new COVID-imposed restrictions on transport infrastructure, which is social distancing, sanitization, and not touching access button? And then she makes a comment, this is a time for ticketless and motion sensing access control. So number two, those depots affected by COVID-19, which had seen those departments affected by COVID-19, which have seen reductions in their budgets and now have to be affected by the COVID-19 national disaster imposed reprioritization. What is National Treasury proposing? Number three, 2.3 billion rand reduction from human settlement is an indictment on South Africa, especially in view of the number of people living in squalor and in these sprawling informal settlements. I'm sure this is just a statement. And number four, is National Treasury proposing new guidelines or standard operating procedures for the new way of work to reduce the cost of travel, accommodation, goods and services, and S&T in general? I hope I'm not too fast. And then lastly, basic education and health needs rapid response teams to deal with challenges of the new type of infrastructure and environment to render these services. Is National Treasury engaging with these departments and DSD to ensure that the most vulnerable are not done under by the lack of capacity in these departments? There are about five questions, and I can see there are some who we start talking about COVID, and I think perhaps some of these things will be coming with the adjustment budget. But if you don't mind, you can pick on those that you would like to respond to. Dr. Mampo, don't forget, there was a question where I was saying where do I account for income from the fines that, for instance, we impose, amongst others, for instance, for those who are involved in uncompetitive behavior. Which line item is that? Thank you. Can you please respond?
Chair.
Yes, yes, sir.
Sorry, Chair, to interrupt. I have a short follow-up, if I may. It's a one-line question in response to the request from the Deputy Minister.
Please do that, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. Just on a lighter note, I was wondering, you know, with Dr. Modisa, Dr. Masondo, and Dr. Mokhajana, I was wondering if perhaps this was a meeting of the health portfolio, but nonetheless. Chairperson, yes.
Can Honorable Ryder justify why he's saying that? We all look sick.
No, it's all doctors. There's more doctors here than there is on the health portfolio.
Not much. When I graduated, he said he's gonna come to me for medical assistance. I had to carry.
Good. Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. And I think it's important.
Remember, can you allow Honourable Ryder to finish his question? I just decided to give him some said yes, but a very short one. Please come in, Honourable Ryder.
Thank you, Chair, and I appreciate your lenience in this regard. Chair, the Deputy Minister has asked us to assist by processing this bill speedily. And the question that I have for him in this regard is that what certainty do we have that once we approve this bill, noting the comments from Dr. Modisa that we are in trouble, those were her words, we are in trouble, what assurance do we have that the departments are not going to be spending money that is likely to be reappropriated in the adjustment, quickly trying to get it through before the adjustment budget comes through? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Was there somebody who was dying to say something? No. Thanks. Can I allow...
Jadu.
Who's that? Oh, Honourable Jadu. Honourable Jadu, please come in. Yeah, you never got an opportunity. Yeah.
Input now, Chair, before, because maybe after you will summarise. Chairperson, I think the GM and the National Treasury have given us a very clear outlook in terms of where we come from February, and also the impact on the COVID-19, and then also the giving us a platform as this committee for proper preparations going forward in terms of the approving the bill, and also that the department is going to come back. So, Chairperson, I think in terms of covering all the issues that was in terms of SARS, university, international schemes, legal court.
Yeah, I can see we are losing Honorable Zatu. Our apologies. I think I would allow National Treasury to come in the meantime. If he comes back, I'll find a way of trying to sneak him in. DM, Mampo, quickly, these questions which have been raised, I think maximum 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. So basically, I think these questions, most of them relate to the special budget that we're going to bring to your attention in June. But just to give committee members a background of how we do things in terms of government and as an executive, is that departments, when they need to spend money for a different purpose, they always have to come to the Treasury to ask for viamment, or they have to come to Parliament to ask for this viamment. So for every money that has been moved, there's been intense discussions between what between the Treasury and those departments, and what we have approved, it would be what is within the law. So the reason why, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we needed the appropriation bill to be enacted is that without an appropriation bill, the departments are not allowed to spend on anything that is new that was not in the appropriation bill last year. So basically what it means is that all they can spend the money on would be what was in the budget last year, and they can only spend 45% of it. So there's no department that can misuse the funds and pay for something new and say this is COVID related. One, they have to come to Treasury for a viamment, and if not allowed, they have to wait for the appropriation bill to be passed, and then they can allocate the funds. But all in all, we have been working with departments. So once we were under lockdown, we asked all the departments to basically apply to the Treasury for emergency funding, and we are assessing those requests that they have given us, and what we're looking at is, one, are these requests, can they be funded within the existing baselines that they have? Can these requests be funded through the reprioritization? And are these requests so large that they will need additional funding? So that is the process that we're still following, and the finalization of it, of course, will be when the minister presents this special bill on the 24th. So for now, the departments can only spend within the prescript of the law. So the issues of the reallocation and how we are dealing with the departments who might misuse the funds, most of those things we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And even the chief procurement officer, she and her office have been very busy helping the departments to make sure that however they procure
these PPEs, it's in line with the law and they won't get into trouble. So we have been working with the different departments. And I think in terms of the reallocation to PRASA, honorable members, even when I started the presentation, I did explain that despite the fact that PRASA is understanding, we will still in future, once they deal with government issues, have to worry about where do we find the money and reallocate it to them. That's why I said just because they are understanding, it doesn't mean the service is not needed. The service is still needed, and this basically postpones the problem by a year or two. We will still have to deal with the problem later on. And Chairperson, your question on the fines. So if you look at the documentation, there's a line or there's a table that says departmental receipts. So all the money gets paid into the National Revenue Fund and then it's classified as departmental receipts, and there's a line that is fines, penalties and forfeits, and that money goes into the NRF and we reallocate it for other spending patterns. So I think most of the detail and the explanation of how we're doing the special budget or yes, the adjusted budget will be provided on the 24th of June. But I just want to basically tell the committee and assure the committees that we are working with the department. All the spending so far can be accounted for. And it's not only public finance that is working with the department, but it's also public finance and the office of the chief procurement officer, just to make sure that Treasury manages and looks at how the spending are done by the different departments. But most of these details, honorable members, will be provided for in the adjustment budget. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Mampo. DM, anything from your side?
Thank you, Chair. Just to add to the question asked by Honorable Ryder regarding what we, and I think Dr. Mampo has fully answered it, but all I will appeal for is for the Parliament to, and this committee in particular, to make sure that no department, we need to be held accountable as departments, that we don't use the money outside this bill once it's passed, because that will be illegal. People will be breaking the law if they do anything outside the bill once it's passed into an act. And I do think that there are early warnings that government generally uses to make sure that we spend within budget. So there's a number of internal mechanisms in which cabinet meets, accounting officers are held accountable on quarterly basis on how they are spending the money that has been allocated to different departments. And I want to assure Honorable Mahlangu, dear lady, that the PRASA is one of our priorities, and it's important that as we talk about the cost of doing business, we must also be talking about the cost of living and the cost of looking for work, looking for going to work, and PRASA. It's important insofar as providing transportation to the workers, to the poor, in order for them not to rely on very expensive modes of transportation. And PRASA has been established for that. So we really are committed to supporting PRASA, just to augment and support what Mampo has basically said. And I think, Chair, on the competition, the fines that are imposed by the Competition Commission, I think Dr. Mampo has answered that. And maybe we'll have to come back with a list of how much we've collected insofar as these fines are concerned. We'll have to come back to you insofar as that issue is concerned. But I think we need to appreciate the fact that some of the companies may not be able to meet their obligations insofar as these fines are concerned. Given the, and I'm not saying that we need to provide an excuse for, companies that are not that are able to pay, but they don't want to pay using the COVID. But there are companies that are going to have serious challenges insofar as the payment of the fines, precisely because of the problems induced by the COVID-19. And I think we'll have to deal with company case by case, continuously provide reports on what we're basically doing insofar as those companies are concerned. Because you're right, the companies have misconduct and they found guilty, and those misconduct, they enable them to generate rents as a result of their business misconduct, and the Competition Commission finds them guilty precisely because of those misconduct. And those misconduct, like I said, they enable them to generate undue profits, and therefore indeed they do need to pay as a consequence of their misconduct. But some of them, they may have serious challenges insofar as the payment of those fines are concerned, and we've got to deal with them case by case without having a general approach that just because it's COVID, therefore you are exempted or you've got to repay this amount at this level and all that. That has to be treated or dealt with on a case-by-case basis. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, DM. All members, I think we are gravitating towards the the end of our session with National Treasury. I don't need an answer now, DM and Dr. Mampo. The one area that, for instance, we have dealt with is the question of the land bank and the question of the lack of developmental funding for the land bank. And I don't need to stress to you the importance of that institution as far as food security is concerned, which I think will be exacerbated by the COVID-19. So it's an area that, DM, when you come back, my apologies, we definitely would like to hear what you have done with that. So that's your part course that you definitely have to look at. I think honourable members, both from the standing committee and the select committee, that brings us to an end of the session with the National Treasury. But just to say perhaps what it's obvious to many of you, we're not going to start with the appropriation bill before the finalization of the Division of Revenue Bill by the National Council of Provinces. So that's why we're very much happy that the NCOP was able to pass the Division of Revenue Bill so that we can start with this process that we are engaged with today. We wouldn't have started with this process before that. Thank you very much. As I said, the Standing Committee on Appropriations still having a matter, we are free to remain, all of you honorable members. But if I may, I would like to jump to that next item, which is around announcement and certain things. Thank you so much. honorable members, Standing Committee on Appropriations, you know that, in fact, DM, I think, DM, Afonso, please remain because you were there. There's an area which has which is in public now, and there have been statements coming from ESCOM about some of the proceedings which took place here in the committee and before that. Basically, it's about the amount that ESCOM said had been agreed. They didn't say it last time, but in our earlier conversations, they said the amounts that were overpaid erroneously, and then they were in the process of getting that money back, and they'd agreed to the person who was overpaid that money. So it has, I've seen some statements and honorable members, the statement I asked the Comm Secretary to share the statement with you. So I think we've got a duty to clear that confusion. So I just decided that let me get management to give us some background information to that discussion, just to jog our memories, and then we'll take it from there, because we've got a responsibility to clear any misunderstanding, if there's any, or any confusion out there. I then requested Sifiso Magagula just to go back and with the committee secretary to just look at the genesis of this discussion and where we are at the moment. Sifiso, are you there?
Yes, Chairperson, I am here.
Okay. So I just want you to go over as to where this thing started and where we are now, so that we and then allow the other members just to reflect on that. Just to say, is that their recollection? If you can, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, you will remember that last year, to be precise, on the 14th to the 16th of October, we had planned an oversight visit to ESCOM and BRASA. And then we went... Yes, Chair.
Are you having problems with your signal there, or do you want to switch on your...
My camera?
Your video camera, yes.
Okay, yes, Chair.
So that you make sure that we are not talking to the ghost.
Oh, yes, Chair, I'm here.
Thank you, please.
Honorable members, you will remember that last year, from the 14th to the 16th of October, 2020, we had planned an oversight visit to ESCOM and the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, which is BRASA. However, due to parliamentary processes, we were called back before we had an opportunity to go to BRASA. But we successfully went to ESCOM offices in Sandton, in Megawatt Park. And the reason why we went for that oversight was to deal with, for an example, because we're dealing with the special appropriation, but also we were dealing with the financial challenges that are facing ESCOM. And when we were at ESCOM, when the honorable members were engaging with ESCOM and management, the committee was informed that there was as part of what ESCOM was presenting in terms of their financial challenges, they indicated to the committee that there was a company that was erroneously paid 4 billion rand. And ESCOM was in the process of recovering that money. And they have already engaged with the company. And then they have acknowledged that they received those funds. Particularly, it was in the construction of the new two power stations, which is the Busile and the Medupi. Honorable members, subsequent to that, when we came back and adopted our oversight report, on the recommendations of that report, we highlighted the issue of ESCOM having to report to the committee on the progress made with regard to recovering that 4 billion rand, which the committee was told by ESCOM it was erroneously paid to this company. However, at that time, we were not told the name of the company. Honorable members, we subsequently wrote a letter. When, if you remember, last year in December, when the committee was doing its annual report, when we were briefing the committee about outstanding matters and things that we need to follow up, there is a report that we produced on that. We also highlighted that the issue of the 4 billion payment that was made in error by ESCOM, we need to follow up. ESCOM must report to the committee. Subsequent to that, honorable members, when we came back in February this year, and then the committee, we wrote a letter through the chairperson to all the institutions of government that were having outstanding issues that they needed to report to the committee to in those issues, emanating one from that oversight report to the special appropriations bill that we approved last year to ESCOM, number three, on every issue that we said departments must report to around the adjustment budget in October. On the 25th of February this year, honorable members, the committee wrote a letter to ESCOM, reminding ESCOM of its commitment to report to the committee around the issue of the 4 billion that was erroneously paid to this company. In order, what we're trying to do is that the committee must be informed on the processes, whether ESCOM had already recovered that money or they have not recovered that money. However, honorable members, due to the coronavirus issues, we have not got a response around the 4 billion. And then now we got this statement that was circulated, honorable members, which seems to suggest a lot of things, but I will not say on that because you have read it already. But one thing that I want to emphasize, we didn't assume that ESCOM erroneously paid the money as the committee. ESCOM told the court they voluntarily gave that information to the committee during our oversight in October last year. And then now, as we have read, honorable members, I will leave the comments to you, but the background is that we were informed by ESCOM around this 4 billion. We didn't call a native doctor to sniff around what is happening in the finances of ESCOM. ESCOM informed the committee around this money. And if ESCOM is to report to the committee, if they've changed their position, they need to tell the committee that no, they made a mistake, if it's a mistake, or whether they have recovered the money or what. But what we are following up is a matter that the committee was informed by ESCOM. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you so much. Mr. Magagula. So that I just thought let's have that scientific background to this this matter, because it's something which is out there in the past. Can I ask all members again to switch off their mics, please? All members, ladies and gentlemen, please. Yeah, thank you. So that's the background, and I'd ask the committee secretary therein to circulate that statement, which was very much confusing to me, to say the least. But having said that, there are also questions which have been sent to us around this matter. You saw the statement which was sent to you. I don't know whether there are any comments which are coming from your side. Just indicate if you want to talk.
Chairperson.
Hi, Honorable Joseph.
May I speak, Chairperson?
Please do.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I have noted that
statement
by ESCOM, and thank you for...
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
Just not all of us, because some of us had raised their hands system. If you can just note all of us, then you can...
Okay, there's Honorable Joseph, there's Honorable Kaiso, there's Honorable Mlenzana. Who else wants to talk to this matter? Honorable Joseph, Honorable Kaiso, Honorable Mlenzana, if anybody else.
Imam, Sheikh Imam. Sheikh Imam, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I continue?
Honorable Chairperson, I will suggest that Honorable Kai continue during the meeting.
Okay, continue, Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make three points. First of all, it is very important that we all get on the same page. All stakeholders trying to find a solution. Government is trying to find a solution. We are part of it. So it's important that we come onto the same page. I want to propose, Chairperson, that first of all, that we get back to the oversight report. Obviously, I need to go back to the records. I think I always printed my reports and made copies in the office. But the oversight report after the visit to ESCOM that the committee adopted, that would be precisely what is in there, as the officer said, he quoted from there. But it's also good for us just to get that report, that we get the background and the gist of all the information that is in there. Then my recollection, Chairperson, I remember the amount very well, 4 billion. But I also remember on our visit, oversight visit to ESCOM Mega Park, besides the companies that were involved, not mentioned at the time, or the company or companies, there was also a reference made to invoices paid to a company or companies, incorrectly, if I can put it that way. That is my recollection is correct. So the report, our own report, must tell us what is our recollection, and then the recording of that meeting must tell us what exactly was said to us. Otherwise, we must get that fact straight, that we don't speak past each other or interpret incorrectly. So, to for our own sake of the committee, to make sure we are on the safe side, that we establish ourselves what ESCOM have told to us before we interpret now what they are saying in the media. So we need to get on the same page in closing, Chairperson, and resolve that. But thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I think the ESCOM or the author of that statement seek to undermine this committee. No wonder why we're told as a committee that we don't know ESCOM. Now, this is that statement reflects exactly that assertion that as a committee we do not know ESCOM, and we can tell that we know because we went to do oversight visit. So it's correct. My mind recalls very well about the issue of 4 billion rand that we were told by ESCOM, which by that time the same authors of the statement were not there to account or to can make us very knowledgeable about the 4 billion rand. So it unless we're dealing with Dr. Jekyll and Hyde here, and the authors of those statements need to retract that. We did our work, we have a report, we can relate all the facts that it was ESCOM which stated that there is a 4 billion rand that was being referred to be erroneously be made regularly. So instead of giving us a report, now we are being fed with a statement which seek to undermine this committee. And I must state upfront that we as a committee, we must condemn that behavior of ESCOM. We still are waiting in that report. We don't go back, that report must be submitted, and that statement must be withdrawn. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Lenzana? Honorable Lenzana, are you there?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. You know, two things are running in my mind, Chairperson. The first one is, remember, Chairperson, I made a message in the chat box in our last meeting with ESCOM, where I literally indicated that, look here, we are being undermined here by this professor who has now resumed duties as the chairperson of ESCOM. Like Honorable Kaiso is saying, you know that statement which said we do not know what is actually happening in ESCOM, had a mouthful.
But then beyond that, what I want to appeal to the committee, I want to appeal for calm. Because, Chair, the school of thought that I have is that you just cannot balance emotionality and rationality. Immediately, a person will become emotional, who will then not be able to be rational. Chair, I've got a suggestion here. One is that, let me agree with both honorable members that have spoken. Both of them. One is that let us instruct ESCOM to come back to us, particularly with a report that we want. As Honorable Kaiso is saying, we are awaiting a report from ESCOM, not the statement which is circulated far from us, but talking about us. Then the second one, Chair, would be going back to our own record and extracting the details. Because now what we need, as Honorable Joseph is saying, we need now to be very fine in terms of details. Particularly, Darren, records of the two meetings. The one at Mega Park where we were undermined once more by ESCOM board. Remember, Chairperson, they preferred the Chinese delegation more than us. Then second one would be the second meeting in Parliament. That is where these revelations, correctly, Honorable Joseph, were made. It was in Parliament. Two meetings staggered. So that is what I would suggest, Chairperson. The last one would be, from your desk, please, instruct ESCOM to retract that statement up until a stage where we are within the four walls or within the virtual meeting with ESCOM, wherein they would have reported to us. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to say something on this matter, honourable members?
Yes, Chair Sheikh Imam.
Honorable Sheikh.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that, Chair. What is clear, Chair, is that with so many honorable members being present at these meetings, there appears not to be any confusion as to what they've all heard. So I think let's rule that part of it out. And we must also admit and agree that there's no smoke without fire. And I think I must agree with the honorable members that yes, we need ESCOM to give a report. They must retract their statement. And I think this matter needs to be extensively investigated, even with the pronouncement, the company was, who benefited, who the directors are, and when, everything that you can come up with. Because clearly what is told here, that the end to corruption is nowhere near. It's going to continue until we're going to do something about it. And I want to urge, Chair, that at the earliest convenience, you call ESCOM to come and account. I'm very disappointed. Unfortunately, I wasn't at that meeting, at that oversight. I'm very disappointed to hear from our honorable members how they were treated by the ESCOM team. I'm really, very disappointed about that. And I think it is time we call them to come and account at the earliest convenience.
Honourable members. I don't think there's any confusion on this matter from our side. I agree with the honourable members. again, the background general was ESCOM wanting to tell us they are doing something, right? Because we're busy with the adjustment, appropriational adjustment at that time. And we're saying we want everybody to come to the party, if you remember, so that as government we are doing this, but we also wanted management to come, wanted the board to come to the table and tell us what they are doing and so on. So it was then that this thing came up. No. In fact, at that time, there was not even a dispute with the company, which had been, quote-unquote, erroneously paid, right? They said it has even agreed. So all that we wanted to see from our side is that how far that had that process gone. So I agree with the other members that we are waiting a report on that. And as the committee directs, we at the first opportune moment would like to get ESCOM back. The statement seems to suggest that perhaps there was confusion the last time we met with ESCOM. This thing that didn't start last week. It's something which has been there. That's why I asked Mr. Matagula to go back. And in fact, it's good that the members are saying that they wanted these documents. And Mr. Makakula has gone through these documents as directed, because I directed him to go back and check these things. That's why I even talk about the letters that were sent to ESCOM to deal with this thing. And from my side, I didn't think that there was a problem before the statement. You see, I just thought perhaps there were things slow about these things and so on. And even now, I would like us to give ESCOM a benefit of the doubt for two reasons. I think perhaps the CEO, when he came to us, was not properly briefed about this thing, and which is wrong for ESCOM to do that. And they come and dispute the things that we know are very clear about. One of the reasons why we're saying, if somebody can, whoever was, wanted to know who paid that man, and was saying, is it the only mistake which has happened? Remember, we're talking with the budget of Usile and Medupe, which has just gone out of the way, skyrocketing. We're saying, is it perhaps, was that the person that people have been overpaid, and who was responsible for that, and what was happening, and so on and so forth. Remember, to keep 5 billion rand for a year, I mean for a day, there's an interest that ESCOM is losing. And before we know, the people of South Africa are expected to come and bail out ESCOM. So there are all those things that we definitely must look at. And I would say, since the CEO is new, he was not aware. I don't think he was aware of this background, hence the statement. But they had the duty to go back to the people who were there to say exactly what happened there. So as I'm saying that, as Oral Mlenza, I was saying that Oral members should not be emotional about it. I think it's an error that we need to be corrected. And the only way it can be corrected is for us to get one. We're still waiting for the report from ESCOM as directed and as promised, that wanted to have that report being sent to us. But the Oral members are saying that at the earliest convenience, we need to... we need to call ESCOM back. But I think it's very important, Honorable Joseph, that we shouldn't create confusion where it's not there. We know exactly what was said to us, hence the follow-up letters and so on going to ESCOM. So we're very clear as to what happened. And I'll request Darren and the members of the staff to share with the committee those documents. I know I've seen some questions from the press coming our way as the committee. Do you have those questions? Do you have those questions, Darren? Did you see those questions?
Chairperson, no, I haven't received questions from the media, but
they were sent to the committee media person, Felicia. They're following up on this story. So I wouldn't like us to create an impression that we don't know what is happening. When this matter was raised last week, it was again more about the follow-up of what had transpired before, and these letters that and the letter that Mr. Makakula is referring to. So I think that's very clear. But just for completion, we'll circulate, and there's the committee report. Remember, after an oversight report that was adopted by Parliament, not just by the committee, presented the committee, adopted by Parliament, which talked to those things. So I'll request Darren and the staff to assist and just share with the honorable members those documents. And I think if we respond to the media, our response will be informed by this discussion and by our knowledge and the fact that the committee has called as comment. I think in the meantime, they'll try and also check from their side. I still remember that the person who was leading the executive on that day was the COO, Mr. Oppenhauser. I think if the CEO at ESCOM can just sit down, they'll remember this incident. It had nothing to do with the business, but business rights to practitioner that is also, so things are, seem to be being conflated there. So we know very well what was discussed with us, as Mr. Makakula was saying. It's not even as if we're probing, having heard somewhere. No, it's information which we appreciated that was volunteered by the management of ESCOM. I think that's how we'll proceed, members. I think you are marching orders loud and clear that we should write to ESCOM and tell them to retract the statement. And again, while we're working on the because the statement is definitely not factual. And I'm saying that giving the CEO benefit of doubt are the things which predates his being at ESCOM. So I think, can we proceed that way, oral members? Or is there an addition that you think you want to make on how I've summarized?
No, I think the summary is perfect, Chairperson. Agreed.
Okay, thank you.
Agreed.
Okay, that's how we'll do it. But as I'm saying,
agreed.
Yeah. Because I want just to stress this one from Honorable Mlenzan, where he was saying that the matter which I don't think we need to be emotional about it. Let's say again, there may be a different understanding from the new CEO and I think even the spokesperson is new. So we need to make sure that we call them and tell them about what transpired, because it's us who were there and they were not there, and hence the reason why we want the information that we're looking for. Another information, so that it's not forgotten, we have said another thing that we're told that ESCOM is busy in discussion trying to find an amicable solution about the coal prices, right? And in the last meeting, they said that is a stage where they wouldn't like to divulge anything. But I'm sure that at some stage, they'll also be able to tell us exactly the information that we have asked, which are those companies, by how much have they been charging above what is normally the market price and the conditions thereof. But we are not there at the moment. I think let's clear that one out. We've got serious and urgent matters to deal with. As you could see when National Treasury was presenting the monies that have been given to ESCOM, the bailout by the people of South Africa, we need to be able from our side to say we've played our oversight responsibility to the best of our ability. I think our members, let me thank again all of you, ladies and gentlemen, for who attended, honored members, the members of the staff, media, fellow South Africans. The meeting is adjourned. Our next meeting is on Friday, remember? Don't forget, Darren, what time?
It's Darren, Friday at 3, Chairperson.
It's a joint sitting again, is it not so?
Joint meeting with the Select Committee on Appropriations, public hearings,
yes,
on appropriation.
Yes. Yes, we're having public hearings on the appropriation. So hope to see you on Friday, honorable members. But thank you very much for making yourselves available. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.